Hey to all you fish enthusiasts out there. Whether you're an avid angler or just curious about fish, we'd like to welcome you to Fish of the Week, your audio almanac of all the fish. It's Monday, April 29th, 2024, and we're on a week-by-week tour of fish across the country with guests from all walks of life. I'm Katrina Liebig with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Alaska.
And I'm Guy Hero, and we're talking about one of the fishes of the Colorado River. I'm in
what?
The Colorado River right now.
What'd you say, Guy? Okay, I think we've lost Guy. He's down with some flannel mouth suckers in the Grand Canyon somewhere. I think I'm going to need another co-host like right now. Is anyone out there who can help me?
I got you, Katrina. I can help.
Okay, awesome. That was close. Michaela Oles, thank you. Michaela is with our Mountain Prairie Office of Communications, and she's going to be perfect for this episode. We are very pleased to revisit the razorback sucker, a very cool, but also unfortunately endangered Colorado fish that we first covered back in season 3 with Tilden Jones. And we've got two new guests. They're bringing new perspectives about this fish. And Michaela, I'm hoping you can help us with some introductions.
I'm excited to introduce two very special guests today. We have Kira Steven, a senior at Palisade High School and an active member of the school's on-campus hatchery, where she helps raise razorback sucker. We also have Patrick Steele, aka Pat. He's a beloved teacher at Palisade High School, and he's also the hatchery's fearless leader. Thanks for joining us, you two. We're super excited to have you.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. I continue to be fascinated by how this fish looks and how a lot of the native Colorado River fish look, for that matter. And Kira, I'd love if you could just help us imagine what the razorback sucker looks like, maybe for someone who's never seen one before.
So a razorback sucker can grow up to like 3 feet in length. They have a very distinctive keel, very similar to some other endangered species like the bony tail, but that's more fleshy. The razorback's keel is made out of bone. So, you know, it's very hard when you touch it.
Yeah, that's big.
I think one of the things that we would look at is that bony material sits right behind their head and creates a big hump on their back right behind their head. That bony material creates a keel, almost like the keel of a boat. As a boat cuts through water, that V on the bottom of the boat cuts through water. The keel on the razorback is just inverted. And so it's an inverted V on the back of the fish, and it does the same thing as the keel of a boat. It helps it cut through the water, helps it swim up those raging Colorado spring runoff waters. And yeah, just beautiful fish, biggest sucker fish in the world, kind of a brownish top and yellowish belly, which really helps the camouflage piece in the murky waters of Colorado. And just very unique in terms of that humpback that makes the razorback a razorback sucker.
Very cool. Thank you. And they have I think their face is adorable and their lips too, they're a sucker. But yeah, just a really, really neat looking fish. Pat, when did you first learn about this fish and what about it inspired you to get involved to the degree that you have?
I started teaching a class called River Dynamics. I actually got to take it over from a retired teacher, and we're doing a lot of field trips out to the Ouray National Fish Hatchery Grand Valley Unit in Grand Junction, Colorado. And we really started learning about those fish there and their role in the Colorado River, and just always was fascinated by those trips with students. And one day, Mike Gross, who is the fish culturist at that hatchery, just kind of mentioned at the end of one of our tours that one of his dreams was to put a fish hatchery at a school. And basically at that point, I told him that Palisade High School is the perfect place for this. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it took us about 5 years of planning and fundraising. We were able to basically repurpose a building out at our outdoor classroom, which is kind of back behind the school. And we were able to, with a lot of help, turn it into a cool little fish hatchery.
I wish I'd gone to that high school. That sounds awesome.
Same. Can you tell us a little more about how the community came together to help with the project?
You bet. We were fundraising the heck out of this. And as we were talking with community members and trying to get help, basically, it started by word of mouth. We had some key people, David Miller, who was one of our basically liaisons in the community. He was very involved in a lot of the different environmental entities within our community. He was going to, you know, State of the River meetings and going to just all kinds of stuff around the community and really just promoting like, hey, this is what Palisade High School is trying to do. And over time, like it just kept catching wind. The next thing you know, we had some people that were helping us with the planning. We had an architect volunteer time to help us with the drawings and the scale of what we needed to do. We had some construction guys help us with figuring out what we needed in terms of electricity and insulation and ventilation and those things. We had some parents of students that were really fired up about this, and they started helping us with laying out a plan and putting together a prospectus, and then had us going out with those tools and talking to the community. And then that piled on with us finding some key local grants. We applied for a grant through the Lions Club of Grand Junction, who was so excited about this project, gave us a lot of money. They were our largest funder. The Western Colorado Community Foundation was very excited about it. They were a very large funder. Alpine Bank's Environmental Issues Unit really helped us with funding. And then from that, we had a good 10 or 12 other funders that were really key ingredients and little things that we had to have like immediately that weren't necessarily big grant applications, like our Rotary Club here in Palisade and SGM Engineering, and just an awesome all around locally funded program.
That sounds like a lot of community support. That's really neat. Were folks familiar with the fish when you were going around to them, or did you have to do a little bit of outreach on the why?
They were definitely not familiar with the fish. A lot of it was, well, how come you're not raising trout? I think that our biggest push at that time was just the fact that this endangered species was really to be able to help repopulate these fish in the Colorado River. And with that being an educational institution, we were able to make that a part of our curriculum. And yeah. And that definitely has a bigger impact on why we need to not just care for these fish, but why we need to care for the Colorado River and all the entities that go with it. So we have partnership with our farming community, with our irrigation community, with our wildlife resources community. And then those people that also, of course, use the river for recreation. It's taken this whole group of people, one, to help these fish come back from where they were in the mid-90s. To where they are now. And we have been able to bridge some maybe differences within the community there, showing that this is something that we value as a community and that we are educating our future farmers and our future irrigation folks and our future ecologists and recreationalists and things like that. And so that's the big picture piece of it.
Yeah. So I know you guys are sitting in the high school right now as we're recording this, and I'm interested, Kira, if I were to come to your school, come to that room where you are right now and tour the hatchery, like how would we get there? What would I see?
Yeah, so our hatchery sits kind of behind our track and football field. So it's a little bit behind the school. It used to be an old astronomy shed where they stored like telescopes and astronomy equipment. We still have a little bit of astronomy stuff in the corner there, but we have three 250-gallon rearing tanks all kind of lined up on the right wall, like right as you walk in. And then straight back into the left is where we keep our filtration system. We have a fully integrated filtration system with two bag filters. We actually just got a vortex filter over this past summer, which was, you know, an incredible improvement for our system. And then we have a big black tank sitting in the middle of the hatchery that we use to store water. And we have a little refrigerator to keep our food in and all of our hatchery equipment, materials, water pumps, chemicals, all the fun stuff.
Yeah, that's cool. And what's the process like from start to finish? Like how do you get eggs? How do you get the fish? And yeah, how does that process go?
Usually in the fall, we get fish from the Uray National Fish Hatchery Grand Valley Unit. But this year was actually really special because last spring, our little team got the opportunity to go and help in the spawning of this batch of fish. So last early May, we went out to Snook's Bottom and got to participate in the spawning of the batch of fish that we got this year. and the big hatchery out in Grand Junction. Mm-hmm. Kept them over the summer, hatched them, and then when school got back in session and we got our hatchery up and running again, we were able to receive those fish as a little fry. They're probably about an inch at the time.
Do they have that little razor at that point in time? Or
like, well, no.
Okay.
No. That young, they look just like an average fish. They're like silver and they don't have the razor.
Okay. And how many students are working in there and what's your distribution of duties?
At the current moment, we have three consistent people who go down every morning. That's me, my coworker Kale, and then we have a newer member, Ashley, and we go down every single morning. We do daily tasks that include feeding. We siphon our tanks. Occasionally, we scrub them, usually like once or twice, three times a week. We do water changeouts 3 times a week, which Kale usually does. A water changeout is essentially we take the water that we have sitting in the big black tank. That's about 300 gallons of water. And we simultaneously empty water from our system and refill it. That way we can kind of keep some fresh water flowing through our system. And we do that about 3 times a week because we have about 900 to 1,000 gallons of water in our system at a time. So it's about a third.
Okay. And how many fish do you currently have?
Usually we have around 250-ish, but currently we have around 300.
Okay.
350-ish.
Yeah. That's so cool. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. Cool thing about our system is that it runs on tap water. It's a recirculating system. And in order for us to run it on tap water, two things have to happen. One, that water has to be to the same temperature as the ambient air. And that's how we heat and cool our water in our hatchery, is through the ambient air. And so we let it sit a couple of days to get up to temperature. And then we also let it sit a couple of days to get the chlorine out of that water before we add it into our system.
Yeah. If you have aquariums at home, you're going to be experts. That's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kira, what's your favorite part about working for the hatchery? And has anything surprised you?
Jeez, this is a really tough question. My favorite part about working with the hatchery is just being involved in this incredible opportunity and the conservation efforts of these fish and the recovery effort, and also the team members that I work with. Honestly, really enjoy the technical aspects of it, which was surprising because when I first joined the hatchery, I was in it for the fish. And as much as I love fish, I have found myself extremely fascinated by the system and all of the things that make a hatchery function. It's been fascinating to work with some other students like Kale, who knows a lot about the system, and Mr. Steele, and just learn about all of the things that make a hatchery.
That was a good answer. That was great.
Mm-hmm.
Pat, what are some of the ways you've seen this project make a positive impact on the students that you work with?
Well, I mean, so many things have come up since we started this a few years ago. I think one, we're very excited to have our hatchery technicians like Kira and Kale and Ashley right now. And they're the ones that kind of run the show. I think that it's awesome that we can take something like that and turn it over to young people and let them take it over, right? Our whole goal, this whole project, was to make it as much student-led, student-run program as we could. And with awesome students like Kira and Kale, they make it happen. You know, they could run the hatchery on their own. They don't necessarily need me at this point. Kira and Kale and the technicians are the professionals that kind of train my students. So when we do pit tagging, Kira and Kale are the ones that are teaching those kids how to do that. They know what they're doing, and they oftentimes are so observant. And I think that's one of Kira's big strengths, is that she is adamant about observing our fish. We talk about like put your face in the water kind of thing, and making sure that you're observing what's the behaviors of those fish as we go throughout the week. And so every morning they observe them and take a look. How are they acting? How are they behaving? Are they eating all their food? Is there a lot of leftover food? How much waste is there? And how are they schooling up or anything like that? They let me know. things that are going on, which is awesome. And that's exactly what we wanted that to be. I feel like I'm just kind of the facilitator or the problem solver if need be, but usually they've already got it figured out and they've just let me know, hey, this is what we did. This is what was going on. Our hatchery project is definitely an educational system. That's our whole goal, right? We basically treat our hatchery like a living lab. We have students that are able to go down there and they set up different experiments. For instance, Kira did a feed analysis study. We were having some problems with some feeds. And so we changed feeds and she was tracking how those feeds helped with growth rates. And then also just our general hatchery system. We've had students look at changing the amount of light in the hatchery to model what we see naturally to see if that impacted rate of gains. We've had students look at indoor rearing of fish versus outdoor rearing of fish and where they compared our growth data of an indoor system to system getting data from like the Willow Beach hatchery in Arizona where that grow their fish in outdoor ponds throughout the year. If there's ideas that students have, we definitely try to make those happen. My other favorite piece is just seeing how excited students get about these fish. Most of my students have never even touched a fish, and let alone when we start talking about the endangered aspect and what's causing them to be endangered. Those kids really start to create an ownership, so to speak. We have several fish that have special names, whether it's their size or they're missing a fin. They've studied these fish so much that they've named several of them. And so that's going to introduce those named fish to our classes and they get an opportunity to get to know those fish too. And then the best part of the whole thing is the release day. And those kids, our whole school feels like goes down to the river and all have opportunities to put a fish into the river. When all of our students get an opportunity to release fish, I feel like they really have that connection to the river. Our hope is that as they become adults, they remember that they helped with that and they were a big part of that repopulation of those fish. And they know the importance of taking care of that river as they get into their adult age. We're not just growing a sport fish. You know, a lot of our students at our school are avid fishermen, and me included. And that's what engages us to interact with these fish. The fact that we spend a lot of time talking about their importance in the ecosystem and what they bring to the ecosystem and what would happen if they weren't in the ecosystem is huge. And then the fact that our students start growing an appreciation for suckerfish, instead of just thinking of them as a bottom feeder or a trash fish, they start looking at them like, man, these fish really are cool. They start to incorporate that and really admire that.
Man, there's so much there. I mean, you got math, you got some engineering with the different systems you have, observations. That's a really neat applied hands-on classroom you've created. Kudos on that.
Thank you. We even have an art thing going on. I'm going to mispronounce this Japanese art, but it's called Gairoko or something like that. It's basically where they paint the fish with ink and then they take rice paper and they press that rice paper down over the fish to get imprints of those fish. They're working with some models that we found and practicing with that. And then we'll be able to use some of our deceased fish from the years that we keep for these types of activity in the freezer to be able to incorporate some of that artwork. And so it's pretty incredible way to tie everything in, not just the normal kind of core classes.
Yeah, those fish prints are cool. I've seen those with some other species. Very neat.
I'm super excited about that.
I think it's Gyotaku. If I'm remembering correctly, my Japanese ancestors are turning in their grave.
thanks for pulling. I agree.
Since you brought up the release day, what are the exciting things that are happening that day? I know you're reaching a really big milestone and you have a very special guest attending.
Yeah, so this year will mark our 1,000th fish released. So over the course of the past few years, we've been releasing like 250 fish a year. And then this year we'll have officially hit 1,000 released into the river. We will also have a very special guest, Jeff Corwin. I'm really excited about that.
When you send the fish off, I'd be curious a couple of the fish that you've named, what their names are and if you have any special hopes for them or if you're going to miss them or feel kind of torn between sad and happy that they're leaving.
Every year we have at least one Timmy and one Jimmy. Mm-hmm. And usually our Timmies and Jimmies are the smallest ones that we find.
Tiny Tim.
Yeah, Tiny Tim and little Jimmy. And then this year we have a fish named Walter, who I'm really excited to release. And he's our biggest fish by far. He's a large fish. I'm excited to see Walter off into his journey to the Colorado River. On release day, it's a very special feeling. I wouldn't say it's sad or happy, really. It's more, it's very cathartic where, you know, yes, I've been down there every single morning with these fish and watching them grow from little baby fry all the way to where they are now. But seeing them be released into the river is a very unique feeling. I'm excited to be a part of such an amazing project. And I'm extremely grateful for the opportunity that I've had to participate in the recovery of this species. And so seeing them go is, while it's a little bit sad because, you know, they're like my little babies, it's very rewarding.
How do you actually get your fish down to the river?
We have a little truck trailer, and the river is only like 2 minutes away from the hatchery. It's right at our back door. We put them in a big truck, and then we temper the water so that it's close to the temperature of the river, and then we just haul them on over to the boat ramp.
A lot of hatcheries just open the floodgate, so to speak, and just kind of send those fish through a tube all at once. And we feel like there's a lot better connection if we release one fish at a time. That's the awesome part. Mm-hmm. It just incorporates so many more students and makes it a lot more fun, a lot more intimate, and just create that connection with those fish. It really is a fun event. We have this tradition of before you release that fish into the river, you have to kiss it goodbye. And so they really get a firsthand look on how good those sucker lips are for that process. So,
oh my gosh.
Kissing them goodbye. So
that's funny. How big are the fish when you're releasing them?
Well, they range anywhere from 3 to 6, sometimes even 7 inches.
Okay, so pretty big. How big is Walter?
Pretty decent size. Walter, I would say Walter's probably like 7 inches, 6.5 inches.
Okay. Dang, Walter.
Yeah, he's a big fish.
By the time we release them, those fish are pushing 10 to 12 inches long.
Okay, so these are big. That's quite large. That's awesome. Big.
And then, of course, on the small end, 3-4 inches.
And that's probably given them a really big, fin up in terms of just some of the dangers they face in the river, taking out all that mortality that they'd experience in the wild. You guys are doing a great job giving them a good start, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's our goal for sure. Get them as big as we can, as fast as we can.
On everyone, time for a minute with Maria. I'm Maria Dosal, calling in from Chogyanglands here in Dillingham, Alaska. Wow, what an amazing fish, this razorback sucker. I really enjoyed learning about it, and thank you, big kagasakun, to Kiera and Pat for coming on today and letting us come into your hatchery at your school. What an amazing experience that is. I was listening in, and I actually shed a tear out of happiness listening to how this program operates. I think it's so beautiful that you're able to provide this hands-on learning experience in a classroom setting for these kids. I can really see that you're building up our next generation of conservationists and to that kagasakun. I definitely applaud you guys for doing this and for keeping this program running. If you are someone who's in education like myself, I am always trying to find a way to get my students to have that hands-on experience and be really involved in conservation. So thank you so much. I really appreciate all of your efforts in doing so. And I can't wait to hear more about your program going forward. And hopefully more schools can incorporate this kind of system with helping save fish populations. So kagasakun, can't wait to hear more. Everyone, have a wonderful day. Talk to you next time. What do you think your future holds? Maybe a fish biologist career?
I would love that. I'm definitely planning on going down this route. I would like to go into biology, potentially like ecology, conservation, you know, do stuff like this for the rest of my life.
Awesome. That's great to hear. You mentioned pit tags, and for folks who aren't familiar, that's like a size of a grain of rice, and you insert them into the fish. Are you guys tracking the fish from year to year, or what are you doing with those pit tags?
Yeah, those pit tags are key ingredients for us to see how our fish are faring out there in the wild. Each summer, as the fish biologists start floating the Colorado River and doing their population collections and things like that, those pit tags get put onto a website/spreadsheet for us. Some data analysis guys basically take that stuff, and they've created some pretty cool maps for us where they've been able to upload the different encounters with our fish through the last 3 summers. We know they're out there, which is awesome. It's a great feeling to see some of them from our very first batch that we released in 2020. They are of spawning age now, could be spawning. So that's one of the unique things, and also one of the problems with razorback suckers is that they don't reach a reproduction maturity until they're 3 or 4 years old. And because that takes so long, right, they got to be able to survive that long to be able to then reproduce. But finding some of our fish that are 3 to 4 years old now hanging out in those big spawning grounds, it's pretty exciting. We just hope that we start seeing some wild fish be born from our lot of fish from Palisade.
That's amazing. I hope Walter and Timmy and Jimmy do well and you're able to track them through time. That's super cool. What would you like to say to other students around the country about caring about your rivers and fish?
Our hatchery is like 11 by 14. It's not very big. And basically what we've learned is if you have a small space, that does not mean that you can't create something cool like this. And the fact that we run our hatchery on tap water. So every school has tap water and every school has probably a small space that they could repurpose and turn into something cool like this in terms of rearing these fish. We're figuring out that you don't have to be nearby an ocean. You don't have to be even nearby any true water resource. We're fortunate that we have the Colorado River in our back door. But if you are able to create partnership with some local resources and you're able to truck your fish to a water resource, any school can do what we're doing.
Yeah, great point. Kira, I'd love to hear your perspective too. Anything you'd like to say to just other students around the country about their role caring for rivers and fish?
If I'm being completely honest, when I started here at Palisade, I had no clue what a razorback sucker was. I didn't even know that I wanted to go into a career in biology. But through my involvement with the hatchery, I've learned an incredible amount about these fish, and I've learned about the impact that an individual can have on the ecosystem. And I've gained an incredible understanding of the role that every individual species plays.
Awesome. Michaela, you work in Colorado. Anything to add about this partnership or the recovery of razorback suckers?
Yeah, definitely. I can say without a doubt that working with Palisade High School, Pat, the students, the partners, it's definitely my favorite thing to help with every single year. In my opinion, it has all of the components for success. It's got adults who are empowering future generations, communities with differing opinions coming together for a common goal. The students are really passionate and they want to learn. And it's really crazy just to see how many partners come together to support this whole project, including the Upper Colorado River Endangered Fish Recovery Program, which is a pretty neat program. It has a bunch of different partners in it that are just trying to protect the Colorado River and its species. And also, the Colorado River is just really awesome. And the razorback sucker is a super cool fish. And I think you can tell from our conversation today, the future of conservation is in super good hands.
Patrick and Kira, anything we missed that you'd like to add?
This project and this ability to incorporate fish hatcheries that are raising endangered species, it's starting to catch on. We're hoping that there's a school in Vernal, Utah, I think Uinta High School is working right now to incorporate a fish hatchery of their own to be able to raise razorback suckers as well and help with the population within the Green River that moves through Vernal, Utah, and their partnership with Ouray National Fish Hatchery in Vernal. I've had some emails and correspondence with a school in Las Vegas, Nevada, that is working with the Arizona State Wildlife and in Nevada State Wildlife. And they have been able to start up a little fish hatchery raising bony tail. And so it's starting to catch on. This idea is starting to catch on, that the possibilities of these being at a lot of inland schools that aren't necessarily near big bodies of water. It's pretty cool to see those starting to pop up. We hope that we can help do that and help those schools implement these types of programs.
Yeah. Do you have any other fish you'd ever like to raise in your hatchery or any plans for future growth?
We always have big plans. It's just trying to find the time and the money to do it all. Mm-hmm. But we would love to, because it is small. Of course, we would love to expand it and make it a lot bigger to be able to just hold more students when we're in there together. Love to be able to create like a classroom right next to it and a lab room right next to it. We've talked about even being able to build like a small greenhouse where we take our wastewater and turn it into an aquaponics kind of system.
Yeah, that's cool.
Run our wastewater to it. The cool part about the razorback sucker is that their population is growing, which is a win on the fish conservation side of things and just the work that all entities have been doing to bring these fish back from almost extinction. If we ever get the opportunity to help maybe grow some pike minnow, Colorado pike minnow, be cool, just because students are always enamored by the sheer size that those can get to and the fact that they're one of the largest predators in the Colorado River and they don't have teeth. All of our endangered species in Colorado River are so unique that any of them would be fun. The speed of the bony tail and how fast they zoom through the water would be really cool to see firsthand every day. And then the humpback chub, of course, being able to see the unique features of that and how they differ between the razorback, even though they have that similar kind of hump on their back. I would take any of them, but we're just still focused on that goal to help the razorbacks repopulate and build up to a sustainable population.
That's great.
Yeah, cool.
I just think this is such a great example of how everyone can make a difference for fish, whether you're a kid or an adult or inland or on the sea. There's a role for everybody and just really great work to you two, and kudos to all the students and that entire team involved with this project. Just really appreciate you joining us and sharing what you're doing. Kara, great job. You're quite impressive for 12th
grade. She's a rock star.
That's great.
Thanks so much for including us. We're really excited about this. Kira's an avid listener to your podcast for sure.
Oh, yeah. Good.
That she hears. So awesome. It's awesome opportunity for both of us, but we're excited to get the word out about this project and hopefully be able to spread it out there. So
yeah, perfect.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. We'll get out there and live with, live from, discover, and enjoy all the fish, especially the razorback sucker. Thanks for listening to Fish of the Week. My name is Katrina Liebeck and my co-host is Guy Iro. Fish of the Week is a production of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Alaska Region Office of Communications. Our production partner for the series is Citizen Race Car. We honor, thank, and celebrate the whole community, individual tribes, states, our sister agencies, fish enthusiasts, scientists, and others who have elevated our understanding and love as people and professionals of all the fish.
So my brother's names are Timmy and Jimmy. And Tommy. So when they were talking about that, I was like, that is so funny.